The promise of America is freedom, equality. But right now, those pillars of our democracy are fragile. Reproductive rights, voting rights, the right to make your own choices and have your voice heard. We must act now to restore and protect these freedoms for us and for the future. We are the American Civil Liberties Union, and we are fighting in every state, every day to defend your rights. And the rights of all people.
We have got to be here. We've got to be strong to protect those rights.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought for everyone to have a voice and equal justice. And we will never stop. Because we, the people, means all of us. To learn more about defending our democracy, go to myaclu.org today.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock. It's also a Tuesday evening, and that means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
No, I feel the same way.
I'm just kidding.
No, I'm not. We are white. White is the word. We have been...
I got up early. I'm perky. Stop. Speak for yourself.
Getting up early, too, but doesn't...
I want to go on a hike.
It's... Oh, boy. It's
nature
six,
walk.
It's 6 o'clock at night. Okay, so it's late now for us because we got up early. And the reason we got up early is because we've been on a crazy schedule over the last week because we just put on a big conference in New York City And we just basically got back yesterday, but the work didn't end there, and the work didn't begin last week. We've been at this for months, if not longer. it's been, oh boy, what a story. There are people listening here on this station that don't know all that we are involved in, that you would get from the other radio show that we do. But just to, okay, sum it up really, really quickly. We do, a hacker conference. It used to be once every 2 years. Now it's every year. It was at, the Hotel Pennsylvania. Then they tore that down. And then, we moved to St. John's University. And then somebody, handed out an anarchist pamphlet that they didn't like, and they kicked us out of there. And then we found another hotel in New York City called the New Yorker Hotel, which, yeah, I always knew it was there. You always see the big letters, but, I just never thought it could work for us. And it did. It did. Boy. Our first conference there, was this weekend, and, people came from all over the world. To put something like that together just requires a lot of people, a lot of work, a lot of dedication. A lot of
coordination,
lost sleep.
Oh, sleeplessness, tumultuousness.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm exaggerating. No, it's work. It's hard work. But yeah, the communicating and getting that critical mass of people activated and excited and focused on that goal.
Sorry, I'm just taking a swig of the German energy drink that we have a few leftover bottles of. yeah, it's called Hope, Hackers on Planet Earth, and we are still recovering from it. We're piecing together the videos now.
Apparently there were talks there, and all kinds of...
There were 100 talks there, at least.
Right, and this is the timeline of the venue, and what you neglect to mention is just how pivotal a lot of what is said there happens to be... with regards to the present state of technology, the state of the art of telecommunications, and where it meets on the internet and in society, and uh-huh. ramifications of it all, the excitement of all, the art and critiques, and everything in between. So we get, and also it's just socializing, getting together, meeting
exactly,
people,
yeah.
making new friends, reconciling with old ones, or.
What I like is just the mixing of people with all different philosophies. We have people from all over the world showing up to this thing. We have hackers of all sorts. We have ham radio people, and believe me, not everybody has the same viewpoint. And that's fine. In fact, that's preferable because then we get to have conversations and, maybe change minds, maybe not, but remain friends. And that's what I saw a lot of this weekend. And it went beyond that, too, because there were all kinds of people who had no idea what we were all about who happened to be in the hotel or working for the hotel. there were just so many amazing interactions that I witnessed. I'm sure many, many more that I did not.
Yeah, that's something I think I can talk a lot about, and a bunch of others of our staff members and staff volunteers, but most of what I do is really being sort of behind the scenes and being a liaison with a lot of people, specifically with the venue, because we have to get stuff in and out of it. We have to kind of clean up. It's just this frenzy of stuff, and you really, especially in a new place, want to make a good impression.
Yeah, and you're involved in so many different aspects of the conference as far as finding us an internet connection, which we were told was impossible, and you did it anyway, figuring out how to stage, load, deploy all kinds of pallets of equipment, supplies, and just basically leading teams of people so that they would help out. And boy, did we have incredible volunteers at this conference, the whole thing. Nobody gets paid for any of this, except for vendors, you know, people who supply us with equipment and things like that. We have so many people just pour their heart and soul into making sure it works. And I think what we saw this weekend was an example of that.
I'm definitely going to use a lot of the things we learned, and now that everybody has an impression of the space, really listen to the, some of the ideas that people that emerge that people mention to us as feedback. But I have my own perspective now about it, and I guess it's a good sign when people are, like, talking about next time and next year. And
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it is really about, I don't know, just so many little vignettes, little stories. I can just speak to so many. I mean, you have to get to know people in the mailroom. You have to get to know people at security or at the front door.
Well, you got to know a guy with a forklift.
I did. That was the coolest thing. Yesterday, a lot of people had to make trains. A lot of people had to get their flight, and things were really wrapping up. And we really don't need a whole lot of time at the beginning of the week. Usually it's just locking up, you know, handing over your door keys uh-huh. and getting your belongings. But the stuff that we were loading, we have a small truck, and we were loading it, and typically we use, like, lift gates and dragging a pallet jack around, but someone saw that we were working, and I don't want to give myself too much credit, but I did my best to help out and, like, wave trucks and move cones and things for other people that were parking there, but I don't know how this person took note of us, but just basically offered, do you need a forklift? I can help you lift. You just sort of directed me to leave the pallet jack with the truck. And we did it in several stages, and it really worked out. People would bring it up from the building, and he would take it from the curb and load it onto the truck, so we didn't really need to operate the truck's lift capability, and then just drag it in and align it in the truck. And we,
but the truck I drove, by the way.
Yeah, you did a great job with that parking.
From Long Island into the city.
Oh, yeah.
I had to park in Queens, pay a good amount to do that, and then bring it back. Yeah. And it's something to drive a truck in the streets of New York City. People give you room. I didn't get honked at once, if you can believe that. And traffic is most definitely better than it was in the past. And I attribute the congestion fee for accomplishing that. So I was able to get in pretty quickly, pull over to the side, and you know, have things loaded and get out of there, so the next truck could come in and have its supplies put back.
Yeah, it's a careful but organized dance. All kinds of activity in this city, but you can kind of synchronize with the pace of it. And in certain instances, like one of the last things we did, from the time the truck showed up to them being gone, it was less than 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
It was only a couple of remaining, like, cases and mm-hmm. items, but I looked back at the timeline of it. I was messaging people, and I was like, wow, that was this whole operation in a really, really brisk period of time. So, yeah, you meet all kinds of characters, and one of the person operating the forklift was like, I think he said 75
years old.
Yeah, telling me about his family and just and the value of work. He was a little disappointed that his colleague hadn't helped us unload when we got there, but I was happy.
We weren't entitled to that. We were, you know, basically it was just a very nice gesture.
Yeah, it was really, really kind, and we just kept our stuff neat and sort of out of the way, because mm-hmm. you realize you're in other people's workspace,
of course,
too,
yeah,
when you're in a venue like that. So and certainly we wanted to keep things safe,
right?
Because it's a frenzy if you're moving too quickly. I mean, especially with heavy items, and if you're not doing it every day, you might make a mistake that someone who's doing it all the time would catch easily. So
right.
I don't want to get ahead of myself and put others at risk. So it's definitely takes full focus and attention, but you meet a lot of people that, you know, if you're showing them respect, they do the same, and you realize, you know, they want you to succeed just as much. And
that is
there's
true.
A lot of hazards that they're looking out for.
But that's true on so many levels, whether you're getting a cup of coffee or, you know, like I was driving the truck through the streets of the city. There were traffic cops almost at every corner, at least during the busy hours. And, you know, I waved at each one of them to thank them for, you know, standing there in the middle of the street and directing us, because many times they would help you get through an intersection where normally you'd be stuck at a light. And, you know, there was one cop in particular. I saw I had only 3 seconds left on the walk sign. And he was just basically encouraging me, come on, you can make it, you can get through here. I wouldn't have tried normally, but he gave me that extra push, and he got an extra wave from me.
Yeah, and that that does everything to keep all the traffic flow, keep it moving, keep the business and everything that everybody's trying to do at once there done and not delayed.
What I really like is that there are so many people who came to this conference who had never been to New York City before, and this is their look at New York City for the first time. You know, right near Moynihan Station, beautiful new train station, and just an extremely lively part of New York City, where you basically see how people interact with each other. You see all the camaraderie and just overall craziness and just how everything is always available 24 hours a day. We didn't have that in Queens. We really didn't. You know, there was a lot in Queens that we did have. There was more space. But people missed this. They missed the heart of New York City. And, you know, it's really hard to do something like this in the heart of New York City. But when you have a lot of dedicated people and, you know, a lot of talent and just, you know, you're determined to get something done, more times than not, you're able to. So I hope that inspires people.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, just that responsibility. You want to do the best work you can, understanding that, you adjust and fix things that don't quite work. But I didn't really feel like I hadn't planned or missed or that I missed something. I think we were very successful, and I think we should all be very proud of it. And going forward, I'm interested in what it turns into and who else joins us and what we're talking about in the future. But for now, of course, I'm thinking of other things and just reflecting on it as a good experience and just thrilled to have provided that or been a part of somebody's weekend that were able to like just explore and do their own thing as well as join us for this and hear everything that's going on in our little community and just walk away with it kind of rejuvenated and thinking of new things and in your own, each of our own worlds. Yeah.
Do you want to describe just what it was like inside, what kinds of things we had? We had three different tracks of speakers that were going pretty much from early in the morning until late at night for Friday and Saturday and most of Sunday.
Yeah, it's sort of a telecast in a sense that it is streamed live on the internet. But most of the people's experience there is just moving pretty quickly. I mean, you get 10 minutes on the hour, so unless it's a 2-hour talk, you're moving from subject to subject. As you said, three tracks, so you move around if you're interested in one thing. And then in between, you could spend a couple hours in a smaller room with workshops or working on a project or visiting different vendors. And yeah, they're always different. We always switch it around and keep things kind of interesting and try new things and see what people like. But people, it's also what people bring to it, like any other kind of festival or show.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got something to show off and tell people about or just enlighten them or just do for fun. There was a lot of fun activities. People were exploring the hotel, and it itself, it's 100 years old, over 100 years old. And
actually, not quite 100 years old yet. It opened in 1930.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's not 100. It's practically 100 years old.
100 years old. It was built in 1929.
It was being designed for... Okay.
Yeah. And then the Depression happened.
Obviously, I didn't go on these tours and learn that, so I was preoccupied. So, yeah, it's an old place, and there are a lot of stories. And
it's where Nikola Tesla lived.
That's right.
And died. He had two rooms.
I hear good things.
One
yes.
for each, apparently. But, so there's this whole...
Yeah,
power plant that in the bottom that you can get a tour of, which I thought was really pretty incredible. Fascinating place, fascinating city. But again, the conference we had workshops, we had villages, which are basically tables of people showing off either their hacker space or their project of one sort or another. We also had an unscheduled speaker track where people could just give their own talk that wasn't on the schedule. We had a ham radio class and a ham radio exam, which a lot of people took and a lot of people passed, so that's always good to see. But you know, we also just had people congregating, talking, and just learning a lot that they would not have had the opportunity to, you know, in any other event.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't know, there was lots of little, I guess, social get-togethers. We had a little bit of a party for the first time.
That's right, we did.
Other groups did the same at local restaurants and venues just outside of it. There was a movie screening.
We had a movie screening
on-site,
had one on-site. We had one at the AMC Theater, which was just across the street, so that was really cool. People got in for free if they had a badge. We had an opening the night before in a bar with free drinks and food for people.
I've never done that before.
No, it's incredible. But that's thanks to generous donations from people to our nonprofit, it was just I'd never seen a communal spirit quite on that level for one of our events. We had the Electronic Frontier Foundation there. We had the Freedom of the Press Association. We had Distributed Denial of Secrets. I always get that wrong. Distributed Denial of Secrets. We had all kinds of groups and individuals. The videos are going to come up on, okay, we can talk about YouTube a little bit too. They're going to be up on YouTube and also our friends in Germany. And you can see for yourself just how awesome this was. But okay, let's talk about YouTube a little bit because we were streaming the whole thing on YouTube. I'm never a big fan or proponent of using Google, YouTube, any of that as your primary means of getting something out because they are horribly restrictive on speech and on content, and they are just terrible as far as actually resolving issues because they just rely on machines. They don't rely on human beings. It's really it's everything we've warned about, and here we are jumping into it. So what happened was in the middle of the night, the first night, we were basically just playing our intermission music that we play between talks. And since there were no talks between, say, midnight and 9 or 10 in the morning, we were just playing a loop of that music. And somehow in the YouTube world, in their algorithm or whatever, they deemed that a threat to community safety. I'm not kidding. This is music that a musician sent to us for the specific purpose of playing between talks. They gave us the music. They gave us the permission. And Google said, no, we think this is a threat to the community, and we are going to take that down. And because this is your first offense, we're not going to make this count as a strike against you, but if you do it again, you will have to take a course. I'm not kidding. This is what they say. You'll have to take a course, a training, and you won't be able to have any live streams or post videos. It would have killed the whole conference for everybody. You know, if one more thing had pissed off Google for whatever reason, it was insane. So what we did was we reached out to our friends in Germany. Chaos Computer Club, they run the Chaos Communication Congress every December. They run the Chaos Communication Camp, I believe, is what it's called, every 4 years in the summer. They have a lot of bandwidth. I mentioned they're in Germany. That's where they have all the technology there, and everything works perfectly every single time. It's true. I'm not even making that up. Basically, we just reach out to them and ask, can you help us with this? Because Google, they're being a word I can't use on the air, but they're, you know what I'm talking about. They responded quickly and said, sure, yeah, okay. And and within minutes, I think, we were online through their servers, and we were able to simply replace Google. And that was brilliant. We still kept it on, you know, in case some people had trouble connecting to them, but there really weren't any people who had trouble connecting to them. So it was an incredible victory, being able to just fix that problem of stupidity, which is what the conference basically is talking about all the time. So I don't know, maybe they just didn't like the message we were sending across, and this was their way of silencing us. It didn't work. didn't work because, you know, when you have a lot of friends, when you have people with technical knowledge, when you have resources, you can't be stopped. You can't. And I want to thank everybody involved who was able to handle that.
Oh, yeah. And it's really important to maintain relationships, and I really appreciate everybody as well. And just, yeah, it's good to have options because you can't have these, like, major monopolies on this with those sort of restrictions and still tell yourself you're able to have unrestrained speech or anything. You know, it's crazy just to buy into that. And unfortunately, they make it very easy to use, which is partly how we ended up with it. But
that sounds crazy, but it's true. Unfortunately, they do make it easy to use.
It's not a trivial amount. I mean, for us, it's not a trivial amount of bandwidth to be hosting video. You never know how many people are going to watch. Of course, there's ways of doing it technically, but we're not quite that diversified internally. I mean, we do a modest amount of this stuff, and having designed that and tested it while you're actually running a live show for our organization is a challenge that we haven't quite found the right solution for. But when you have other people that are involved and they're able to say, like, yeah, we'll help you out, then you know, connecting that up and making it work is really, I think, the best way. I didn't want to play their game.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, basically. And we had already been talking about coordinating with them more, and I'm sure we will in the future. They've done so much over the years to grow their media and video team. I was just, like, on one of their mailing lists. I've just been there for,
mm-hmm.
you know, a long time, ever since I got involved, probably over 8 years or 10 years, or I don't know. But I've just observed it and knew they were there doing their own thing, having all kinds of different content from different events. So, you know, why wouldn't we be up there as well? So, we can do amazing things when we put our heads together. We don't just have to sort of do the easiest thing, especially when you're coordinating and synchronizing, integrating, so to speak, with affinity groups and your peers and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I mentioned the event they have every year. It's very different from what we do. We're fairly small compared, just over 1,000 attendees, basically. They're more like 20,000 attendees. And it's like going to a multimedia show. And it's brilliant. It's amazing. It's worth seeing. I like to think that, you know, they have an event like that in Hamburg every year, and we have our event, and we're in the busiest city you can imagine that's open round the clock. So there's trade-offs. There's different things that are appealing in one place or another. And that's true of every convention, every show, every event. They all have their strengths, weaknesses, and it's all worth preserving. And any particular talk that stands out? We had Cindy Cohn, the former executive director of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. She was basically on stage a couple of times. We had the Rinaldi Santiago, the actor who played Phantom Freak in Hackers back in the 90s. He was there signing autographs and telling stories. It was, you know, I was on the panel of that one, and Rinaldi was on his way, and he was still on the subway when the panel began. He's like, I'm on the 7 train, getting off at 34th Street. I'm going to run down towards the hotel, and we were there in front of a lot of expectant people telling stories, and it was great. It was fun because when he arrived, it was a real highlight, and he had some incredible stories, and it was just a lot of fun. He was there for hours afterwards talking to fans and signing autographs. That was just, you know, one of up to 100 different talks that we had. Any do you remember, Kyle, or that stand out?
Whew. I actually didn't sit through one full talk.
Yeah, that's true. We don't get to do that, do we?
I would love to talk about this, but I don't think it's appropriate. But yeah, you know, when you get more involved in making sure details of something are taken care of, you get further removed from things.
Mm.
And I felt that personally for a long time. So yeah, I love this stuff. And that's why I like try to go through the videos, the best thing is listening just to the audio. Unless there's visuals, you can just kind of play it and listen to the actual talk without the video. And if you need to, you can go back and look at the videos. And that's a way to kind of digest it. But I would definitely say the discussion with Cindy Cohen was really good. I think the other person's name was Denise.
Denise.
And Alex.
Alex Rebellis.
He moderated, and that was really, really good. Really phenomenal work.
Okay, so we're recovering. We have very little idea what's going on in the world. Have you heard anything? No coups, no uprisings, nothing like that?
No, it is a coup. It's already a coup.
Where's the coup? Tell me. Who?
In our country?
Yes. I mean, it's a coup against
a political coup
us, yes.
Against
it's
people.
A,
against,
it's
well,
a bad
the
coup.
Poors.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't want that kind of a coup. I want, you know, okay. There are going to be changes soon, hopefully. Elections, primaries, what have you, all the things that we're looking forward to, and not fast enough, unfortunately. But what is happening? Okay, pick the first story. It begins with Trump. Okay, fine. Trump says no talks planned with Iran. Is this still going on? There was, months ago, I was reading the same headline. No talks planned with Iran. Okay, now he's threatening to bomb Oman. They're an ally, aren't they? Yeah, no, they're a friend of ours, and he's threatening to bomb them? Wow, so Trump has asserted, I'm reading this for the first time, that the United States is not engaged in talks with Iran and has not scheduled any, but has meanwhile insisted that the Strait of Hormuz remains open, which, yeah, I think everybody knows it's not open. He insisted in a social media post today that while the naval blockade of Iranian ports remains in full force and effect, all of the marine traffic was free to pass. He also posted a map depicting the strategic waterway as U.S. territory. You know, I think he hit his head or something because he's spouting nonsense, utter craziness. these remarks appear to reflect Trump's frustration as Iran and Oman, countries that border the Strait of Hormuz, continue talks on managing the strait, despite the U.S. president's demand for Iran to surrender and his threat to bomb Oman should it interfere in the issue. I guess having talks with Iran is interfering with his issue. He says there are no talks or conversations going on or scheduled with the Islamic Republic of Iran. The naval blockade remains in full force and effect. The Hormuz Strait is open and operating. All water mines have been removed or detonated. Iran has reiterated the Strait of Hormuz would remain closed until Washington met the terms of the Paris Memorandum of Understanding that was signed in June with the aim of ending the hostilities that began in March. Okay, it's just a whole bunch of nonsense. It's embarrassing. It really is. And then I don't have this story in front of me, but I heard this on the radio he's removing military forces from South Korea, something I'm not opposed to, but he's doing it because we're getting on so well with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. So we're actually literally taking North Korea's side over South Korea. At some point, I don't know, don't you think something has to happen inside our government? Because he is, you know, I like disrupting things, I do. But I like disrupting things with intelligence behind it. And this is just idiocy behind it. He's just messing up everything. And this is, you know, a lot of really powerful people are in favor of the way things are. I'm not saying that's necessarily the right way, but what he's doing, it's based on complete ignorance. He couldn't find Oman on a map. I bet he couldn't find North Korea on a map. I just think people are going to lose patience and something will happen in one form or another. There will be some kind of action that will topple him from power, just like there is in any part of the world when a leader loses his marbles and starts acting irrationally. Have we reached that stage yet? Do you think we've reached that stage, Kyle? I think we reached it a while ago, but people have been very, very polite, you know, and I think maybe they're losing patience.
I don't know anymore. I mean, I go back and forth. Part of me wants to, like, say, sure, you know, like maximally screw it up, and the consequences or the pendulum will swing even further back. The other part of me is like, yeah, this regime should end early.
Yeah, you know, take a half day. You know, enough.
I don't know. I mean, the thing that bothers me about our geopolitical strategies as a nation state is that most of it, like, we don't get to really have any details about it. It's all cloaked in layers of secrecy or misdirection by our own government. And I mean, I mean that not in a conspiratorial way, just in like a average citizen kind of way. We barely get much of it through newspapers and reporting or the public reportings of the government or FOIAs, but which are freedom of information requests. So like, to my mind, if I...
I'm so sorry. Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
You know, I did the same thing earlier, but mine was quieter.
No, I would have turned down my mic. It just happened so fast. That's from the German energy drink I just had. It's carbonated. And unlike coffee...
Why are we drinking this on air?
Because we wanted a burst of energy. But and I got a burst of energy.
No, it's carbonated.
I got a little more than that. I'm so sorry, everybody. I've never done that on the air before. I'm going to just turn my mic off.
Okay, what time is it? And what is the date? Because this is now going to live in infamy.
This is like July 11th, 1981. And this is documented on 2600.com. Go to the Voice of Long Island section. Listen to the July 11th, 1981 show, and you'll hear me make a noise not quite as dramatic as this one. This is
the 1818 episode.
Wait, what is it? August 18th?
Oh, no, the 818 episode.
Yeah, August 18th, 2026.
At 1836.
I have to call my ex-co-host, Mike Juhas, and tell him about this.
Oh, man.
Wow. I'm sorry, everybody. Really, it's beneath me. I would have turned my mic down, except... This drink, it just hits you fast. I'm so sorry. Kyle, you're making a very important point, too.
Well, you did seem to be, like wincing over there. Like something... Okay, all right. What was I talking... Oh, I was talking about basically the fascinating nature of how little we understand about the points of something. So... I don't know. Maybe our strategic policy has shifted all the way around, and this is like somehow the fifth dimension chess smart move. Do we know? Can we verify? Will this regime justify it with evidence? Will they just, you know, unfurl all kinds of wonderful, like, well-documented logic that will just make this seem like the obvious stance to take for our current president? I don't know. I really don't know anymore. I don't feel like an informed citizen. I don't feel like there are that entertainment or culture, it is a bankrupt marketplace of ideas, in my opinion. I mean, there's not much edginess or challenging of much. And, I mean, people aren't even making references to the kind of change that you're kind of insinuating might be nigh.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what form it would take. If anything, like, we're looking at people, you know, taking self-defense classes or, like, becoming more just outwardly aggressive because we won't reconcile this. The people that wanted this won't learn. Are they ever going to go back? There's not going to be an apology or anything. So, like, the thing I've been hearing a little bit from commentators and that I think is more the attitude is that we're just going to dig in as partisan. It's not going to be like, there's not going to be some reuniting or like utopia that we reach.
No, I'm sorry. I'm composed myself now. But no, you're right. You're right. The thing is, you know, we were noticing this. Gas prices are high. You know, I've said this many times. I don't really care about gas prices, but other things are ridiculously expensive. And if any of this had happened under Biden or a Harris administration or any Democrat, the Republicans would have gone nuts. And they do a better job of it than the Democrats do. The Democrats are like, yeah, that's, you know, it's bad, but you know, this other Democrat is also bad. They try to be fair, and I think that's to their detriment sometimes, where they try to be overly fair, and that doesn't help other people who aren't decided realize that they're a better choice than the Republicans. They'll say, oh, they're all the same, and you know, there is truth to that, but you have to kind of be strategic as to when you want to have that conversation. You know, you don't have the conversation about how there's not really that much difference between Democrats and Republicans on election night. That's not the time, or the eve of the election. That's not the time to make it seem like everything is doomed. The time for that is in the middle, where people are entrenched and running the country.
Yeah.
And right now is the time to be talking about what is wrong, what is happening. And for those people who voted for Trump, to say, is this fair, the way things are now? Am I being treated right after showing support? Am I better off than I was? And in many, many cases, the answer is no, especially cases where people's spouses have been grabbed by ICE. I'm reading stories, horrible, horrible stories, about people who are Trump supporters, and they marry somebody who's in the country legally, applying for permanent residency, and they're grabbed at an airport. I read a story of this, you know, Trump supporting guy who doesn't know where his wife is because nobody will tell him. You know, she was grabbed and taken away in the United States, and this is what you voted for. And people are starting to realize, wow, it's not what I wanted. And if you're able to make that conclusion based on the evidence that's all around you, that's progress. You're getting somewhere, you know, and it doesn't matter what you said in the past, what you did in the past. If you can take those steps and get to a better place, you know, that is a good thing. And that's not something that any of us should reject. We should be encouraging that. I'm not looking for recriminations. I'm not looking to point fingers. I'm looking for us to get out of this and to save ourselves and to save this country. Because if we keep this up where we're just, you know, no matter what, no matter how bad it gets, if it's my guy, then it's okay. But if it's your guy, it's unacceptable. We're doomed. We are completely doomed. And we just can't keep that up. It's not sustainable. I'd like to read something from Trump's former White House deputy press secretary. Her name is Sarah Matthews. Yesterday, she didn't hold back in her criticism of Trump after he attacked another female reporter. And this was, during a heated exchange in the Oval Office. Basically, she said, it's so obvious that he is clearly intimidated by strong women. And he doesn't like when reporters, particularly women, ask him tough questions that he doesn't have a good answer for. This is his former press secretary. Yeah, didn't the current press secretary just leave?
Yeah,
I
was good.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to mention that.
I was protecting you in case you had the same reaction to your energy drink.
You don't need to protect me.
I'm just trying, Kyle.
No, you listen to me. You do not need to protect me.
I've got the sniffles, too, for some reason.
Yeah, what's going on?
It's a post-conference sniffle thing I got going.
Well, there was a lot of dust and debris.
And people, a lot of people.
A lot of people, but I don't feel unwell.
I'm happy the weather held out over the weekend, you know? It was very nice. Why are we talking about the weather? Go back to the press secretary.
Oh, yeah, Carolyn Leavitt left. I was going to say, that this is the not the most recent one to have left, but she's rather a former recent.
She's blaming her kids, not Trump, right?
Is that? I didn't
get that.
She had
a baby recently, and apparently this baby is really demanding. And so, you know, between Trump and the baby wins.
Carolyn Leavitt left over that. I didn't know she was having child.
I thought it was, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong. OTW at 2600.com.
Well,
is our
that's
email
not
address.
Unusual. I mean, it's a whole process.
But
and,
do go on.
With what?
Why are you drinking more of it?
Because I'm trying to finish the bottle, and you said, with what, as I'm full gulp in, I can't possibly answer you at that point.
Can you turn my mic down? I think I just broke it.
This is the show where we lose it.
What is happening to us?
No, tune in for tomorrow's show on the other station, because there's going to be more of us there. You're really going
to... I'm sorry if I blasted anyone's ears. We're going to have to put a warning out there.
Can I continue with this story, then, so if you have nothing else on Carolyn Leavitt?
Do I not have anything
else? Okay, well, that's fine. Earlier in the day, Trump confronted CNN White House correspondent Kristen Holmes. Well, that's not the one he's always accusing of not smiling, right?
Caitlin
Collins. Caitlin Collins, not Kristen Holmes.
Is accused of that, but that's not true because she does smile.
Yeah, I've seen her smile, especially when she's not with Trump.
Usually when she's very far away from him.
Yeah. Well, that's many people smile when they're not near Trump. Regardless, though.
And she's a professional journalist.
She is.
That does her job when she's around him. It does not require her to smile at him.
Yes, but she'd look so much prettier if she smiled.
Okay, just read. Stop. You're.
I want one of these reporters to just, you know, haul off and, like, you know, go right back on him and say, who the hell do you think you are talking to me like that? Do you realize how much more I know about the world than you do? Can you find this country on a map? I don't think so. Can you name this country? No.
I think that's our job.
Sure, you get dragged out by the Gestapo, but, you know, it'd be worth it. And maybe your news organization wouldn't be happy with you, but headlines for a day, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of them talk about that fantasy, but we get to do that.
Well, anyway, she referenced claims by Senator John Ossoff, who's a Democrat from Georgia, that Trump doesn't want to do the job and instead wants to build his ballroom and travel with Natalie. Who the hell's Natalie? On their apparently defenseless flying palace gifted by the Emir of Qatar. Who is Natalie?
I don't know who Natalie is, but I know they're referencing the like new Air Force or the new temporary replacement Air Force One.
Yeah, the Qatari one.
Right, that he wanted so badly. Yeah. Anyway, I think they're just being a little bit like artful or poetic with that. As like a transition in the story.
Anyway, Trump became visibly angry when Holmes attempted to ask a follow-up question following an inquiry about North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He said, quiet, quiet, quiet. You're very disrespectful in front of this young man, okay? And he's referring to Nathaniel Ray, who is the boy whose rescue by a 16-year-old lifeguard in California went viral. So, of course... asking the appropriate question in front of him. I don't know why that would be disrespectful to him, but whatever. Trump has a history of berating female journalists who ask him questions he doesn't like, including Caitlin Collins of CNN, and telling Bloomberg chief White House correspondent Catherine Lucy to quiet piggy after they asked him about Jeffrey Epstein. And all this from his former press secretary, Sarah Matthews. I'm sure he'll have some choice comments about her to make as well, because that is the person he is. And, you know, that reminds me, we had a great panel discussion on the Epstein files, including somebody who helped leak some of the Epstein files. And that video will be coming up. It'll be on YouTube, sure. It'll be on YouTube until they take it down, and it'll also be on the CCC site, and we'll spread it everywhere.
What kind of plans are you making for when this regime is gone? Like, are you stockpiling fireworks or?
I got some fireworks.
Like
I got
extra refreshments or.
I got some high end liquor that.
Oh, I know.
I was thinking, since Election Day of 2024.
Please write us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to know what your plans are. We need ideas.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be unprepared.
No.
Because then you have to rush to the store. You got to order. They're not going to be there. Everybody's going to be done celebrating. So how are you prepared? Are you buying extra popsicles or something?
I just had another of those sounds that I muted on the microphone. You have no idea what you just missed out on.
Practice.
But that was, I had some time to prepare, and I acted like a professional that time. Probably referencing it. Yeah, no, definitely
I
let us know.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah,
people should let us know.
Because you know what's happening. You know people are actively doing it.
Uh-huh.
They're just not talking about it. It's not like an everyday thing. But when it occurs, you're going to realize it because everybody's going to be ready for it.
Right.
Because they did all of this pre-planning. I don't know. I just think it's going to be a big deal. You know, kind of like a carnival mixed with like a holiday. And well, maybe like weeks-long barbecues or something.
Do you remember what it was like when Obama got elected and Bush was out?
I don't remember what I was doing.
I do. I was in the East Village with a bunch of friends, and there was this party like I've never seen before where people were just dancing and drinking all kinds of champagne in the street.
Right.
And it was one of the happiest days ever because people realized that Bush was gone and Obama was coming in. And when I look back on it now, it just seems so much of an easier time than now. You know, Bush, it was comical. He didn't seem dangerous even though he's responsible for tens of thousands of people or hundreds of thousands of people overseas dying, and his ignorance was profound. We have a new record holder now, obviously, The borders have simply been moved. And I can't imagine what it'll be like, no matter who gets elected next time. Although I have to say, we went through this once before. We went through this once before, and Biden was elected and Trump lost. Yes, I'll say that again. Biden was elected and Trump lost. And here on Long Island, couldn't find a single celebration anywhere. I don't know what it was like in Manhattan. I wasn't in Manhattan that night. It just seemed like people were kind of quelling any emotions they had. And that's kind of sad. I mean, yeah, maybe Biden wasn't the best thing in the world, but he certainly was an improvement over what we were going through. I think maybe now, after what we've been going through in these 4 years, only 2 years so far, maybe people will realize, wow, this was actual hell we were going through. And I can't even imagine how bad it's going to get before we get the opportunity to change things. And we see him trying to thwart the results of elections by imposing gerrymandering, by trying to nationalize elections and basically spy on everybody as far as seeing who's voting, who isn't, who's in what party, who's not.
How about Occupy Washington, D.C. with the military?
Yeah, yeah.
That's been ongoing.
That's right. National Guard.
They just extended it past the election.
Did they?
Yes.
Wow. And claiming credit for the crime wave going down, even though the crime wave was down well before all of this started. Yeah, we're going to see all kinds of things. And, you know, a lot of people are living in fear and will continue to live in fear. And it's up to the rest of us who don't feel the same amount of fear to protect them and to fight back.
Yeah, I think it's moved from stunned shock to quiet resolve, people are resolute in their defiance of it, but quiet about it. I think that's the only explanation. Otherwise, we're really gone. If people aren't actually having a change of heart and just simply planning on letting the political winds change when we're casting our ballots next, but I don't know that. People aren't talking about it. I think because maybe they're a little superstitious about it or they don't want to let on too much, but I'm sure polling is ongoing and you could probably measure where it's at. But I do know the popularity and, the sheer variety of ineptitude is pulling people away from supporting it across the spectrum, I think. I think it's way wider because of their real heavy-fisted or heavy-handed tactics and just miscalculations of what people would withstand collectively.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I don't normally spout statements of confidence, but I am confident that if anyone can screw up this election, it's Democrats, because they've got this one in the bag. It's theirs to lose, and boy, can they do that if they double down on stupidity or condemn those who disagree with them on certain points. And we're seeing it already. You know, we have the moderate wing and the progressive wing, people who are socialist. They all are basically for the same thing. And there's differences in opinion on certain issues. There's differences in strategy. Whoever the candidate is, and you guys better start thinking of who that's going to be, everybody has to rally around them, even if they disagree, even if they think they're completely a different philosophy. Are they better than what we have now? And if the answer is even a little bit, I don't see how it could be just a little bit. The future of this country depends on uniting. And if we can't do that, maybe we don't deserve to be the ones in charge. So please, get it together.
Yeah, I agree insofar as it should be in every election, not just the one for like a leadership role writ large. I mean every single, because the real playbook for dismantling the way things have been stacked is all of the small local, regional, state, all of those races add up. It's really the only way out from a lot of what has been understood of it academically and sociopolitically.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We'll continue talking about this in the future, I'm sure. But we're out of time now, and we still have to recover, and I've got to finish this bottle, whatever sounds come out of me as a result of that. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. That's OTW for off the wall at 2600.com. And continue listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. We will be back next Tuesday night, 6 o'clock, with more profound thoughts and experiences. We'll see you then. Good night.
Bye.